He is Jonah Carey, Sportsnet baseball analyst, host of the Jonah Carey podcast as well. It is the Andrew Walker Show, minus Ben Ennis today. How are you, Jonah?
I'm great. How are you, Andrew?
I'm doing okay. Tim Tebow gets promoted and hits a home run and in his first at bat at the next level. And I don't know, I'm thinking eight steps ahead of the game here, but I'm also thinking, is he going to be good enough to play in the major leagues? Well, no, I think we know that to be fact, but that doesn't mean he will not play in the major leagues at one point, one day, maybe this season. Is that crazy?
Well, the Mets are bad, and yeah. So September is not going to matter. And there are all kinds of players. You know, there are stories of guys who are 32-year-old lifers, and they always want a shot, and the team throws them a bone, a knuckleballer who wants, I mean, whatever, that happens all the time. And in the case of Tebow, he's going to make the money, probably. Certainly in the minor leagues, when you talk about these small towns, people are flocking to go see him. You know, attendance in the Sal League is way, way up over last year in games of Tebow, home games or even road games where he's playing. So there's that. So would people come out of curiosity to Citi Field or wherever? Yeah, probably. So, you know, the only thing I would say is he is, to be clear, not good enough to play in the major league.
No.
So, listen, it's America, North America, it's capitalism. You want to do that, that's fine. You're also subject to criticism. You're subject to criticism from the media. And frankly, you're subject to criticism from other guys who bust their butts for decades for a shot at the big leagues and are better than Tebow and never get that shot because they're not Tebow. So, I'm a freedom of choice guy. That's fine. You want to put him on the roster, that's fine. Make some money, that's fine. But you should get some grief for it, too, because there are other guys you're passing over who literally, from the time they were born, devote their entire lives to baseball and don't make it to the big league.
This is, it would not be as bad as, say, Eddie Gaedel in whatever, 1940-something, yes. But close. I mean, put it this way, saying Tim Tebow's not a major leaguer, it's not some big insult. There are wonderful baseball players who are not major leaguers. It's evidence to a lot of people how long a road. I think he's done pretty good, all things considered.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he dabbled in baseball back in the day, but he's shown some competence. It's funny, if anything, it's his defense that's been worse than his offense. I believe I'm remembering this correctly. He had 52 chances as a left fielder. In low A ball, he made 7 errors on 52 chances.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's a lot. So, you know, forget about range factor or whatever, the stat cast stuff. If you just can't catch the ball, that's a problem. But, guy can hit a little bit. He's got athleticism. He's got hand-eye coordination. That's true. I have no doubt that he's trying hard. I think he's devoting himself to his craft. He's just getting a late start. He's 29 years old. So, you know, if you had a normal prospect, he's 29 years old, and he's just been promoted to high A ball, there was a 0% chance that guy would ever make the big league.
Yeah.
But it's Tebow, and so it changes things.
It's the Michael Jordan thing, too, because, we remember that 30 for 30, I think it was 30 for 30, and Terry Francona saying, hey, man, if this guy was 22 and started a double A, I have no doubt he would have been a good major leaguer, Who knows? But I guess we're in that conversation with Tebow. If you can show you're a competent, at some level, professional baseball player at the worst possible time to do it in your life, well, maybe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Tebow's a couple years. I think Jordan was 31. Tebow's 29. Whatever, you know, like I said, it's possible. I haven't written about it. I haven't, pursued the story, but I'm aware of it. And if it happens, it's fine.
Yep.
I'm pretty mad about the whole thing. But I get the excitement for some people about it.
Baseball's funny. I remember, the Simpsons quote: "Death is a part of baseball." Yeah, the main part. Sometimes the best things in baseball have nothing to do with baseball. And the funnest thing, and you have your fun report out right now on SI.
Yeah.
The freeze. The freeze in Atlanta is the best thing to happen to baseball since since they invented the curveball. I don't know. It's great. I can't get enough of it.
Well, I really like it too, and I like all elements of it. You know, here's this guy, Nigel Talton is his name. A track star at very small colleges or whatever, and that's going to be the end of it, right? He's not going to the Olympics. He's not going to be sponsored by Nike. None of that is going to happen. He gets a job with the grounds crew for the Braves. Grounds crew is a challenging job. You know, you really have to, a lot of manual labor out in the hot sun, this, that, pretty thankless. Nobody's ever going to know your name. And suddenly the Braves come up with this promotion, and this guy, first of all, his persona is well-known, but people are writing stories about him as a man. That's cool, a 26-year-old guy to make it. I'm all for that. Give me all the opportunity that you can have. And then I like the nature of the promotion itself. You know, fans come out of the stands, and there's a certain amount of challenge to it, and the big head start, and there's no way he can make up that head start. And just aesthetically, he's fun to watch. Like, he's run. He's very fast, obviously. It's cool in every way. I despise the Braves building having a 20-year-old stadium and saying, we don't need that. we're going to go, I'm not going to be completely politically incorrect, we're going to go away from the people of color and go to where the white people are and build a stadium. I'm not being, that's the fact. That's what they did. They moved to Cobb County on a publicly funded stadium, which is going to end up costing taxpayers tons and tons of money. So I don't like any of that stuff. But as far as the promotion goes, it's fantastic. You know, kudos to the Braves in this case and to Nigel Talton for making a name for himself. We will talk about this guy. Who otherwise would have been a pretty anonymous member of a grants group.
Now, you are based out of Denver, so I don't know if doing the research on this article, you came across the other version of this in Calgary, Alberta. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. Is that happening?
It's happened for a while now, actually. Now, it's called. I want to say Beat the Cow or Race the Cow, but it's the same. Okay. It's the same type of deal. They do it at halftime of CFL Calgary Stampeders games, and they had, there's this track athlete, I guess, and he wears a full cow costume, and he starts at the goal line, and you start at like the 25, and it's a race to the other goal line, and yeah, the cow always catches the guy. That's the thing, but it's been going on for years. They feel like they're screwed over because now the freeze goes viral, and no one's talking about the cow.
I have to tell you, one of my biggest regrets is that I never really glommed onto CFL the way that I could have. And being a Montrealer, too, that stadium, being in Molson Stadium on the mountain with that spectacular view, 20,000
feet,
really intimate, so cool. And I just, I moved away at the wrong time. I moved it to the States in 97, and I just wasn't in it as a kid. I wish I was, because, like, there's so much great stuff around it. And people are so, you go to Hamilton Tiger-Cats game, that's a good time, man. Like, this is just a really lot of fun. And I just missed that boat, and I regret it. So thank you for filling me in. I'm now going to look for this.
Yes, it's worth it. Beat the cow. Jonah Carey joins us on the Andrew Walker Show. I said off the top of the show today, because we've seen all kinds of different Blue Jays baseball, most of it good, over the last 3+ years or 2+ years. And, you know, the second half of 2015 was a party. 2016 was more of a, hey, that's the ups and downs of really what a baseball season is and trying to get in and managing to get in. Like, nothing is like 2015. That's what 2016 was. And the one thing that I think we've all learned or been reintroduced to is you can't overreact. There's no such thing as a big game early in the season, all that kind of stuff. And I'm fighting against my own self lately, because it's late June. And that game last night, it just felt like a big one, right? Baltimore is in town. You haven't been able to get over the hump. You have Stroman on the mound. You lose, you're 5 games under, and you lose the series. You win, you're 3 games under with a chance to win the series in just this crucial 4 series. I have a tough time saying last night wasn't a big game, almost a must win. I hate to do that in June, but I think I kind of sneakily believe it.
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. First of all, I don't dispute it. I think that, you know, whether or not I believe in momentum, if the players believe in it, that's one thing. And then you also have to consider other factors. Number one, the American League is so weird right now. There's just a million teams around 500, and the Jays literally, at last check anyway, have to pass 8 different teams to make the second wild card, to be a road team in a 1-game playoff, and yet they're, what, 3.5 or 4 games? I mean, not far. So theoretically, if they go on a run, they could blow by some of these teams. That's number one. But number two, to your point, I'm a math guy, right? Let's look at the 2016 Houston Astros, okay? The Houston Astros had a lot of the same players they have this year, and they're awesome this year, obviously. And they went on a massive run from about May 15th to the end of the season. But they were so bad. I mean, so bad in April that they ended up finishing the year. You can check me on this. I think they won 86 games. If they were a 500 team in April, they sail into the playoffs with 90-something. Maybe they win the World Series. Who knows? Maybe they would have been the 2016 Cubs. So, you know, of course, it's not, you know, every game counts the same and da-da-da-da-da, and September games seem to have more pressure. But you can't dig too big a hole. You know, the Jays did dig a hole, and then they came back. But because they have that hole, you know, if they struggle a little bit, if they go on a bunch of 6-5 runs, 6-5 is not really good enough anymore. They have to play monster baseball to make the playoffs because of what they did to themselves early in the season. And injuries and other things happen too. So, you know, I'm with you. I think that these are big games because just to, you know, even to get to July 31st and to say, can we go buy a second baseman because we don't have Devo, that's a thing. You know, that's a thing they have to consider. And if they're sitting 3 games below 500 on July 31st, there's no way that Atkins and Shapiro are trading 5 prospects to get a second base. That's not happening. They're not going to try to make the playoffs. They're going to kind of ease into it. So if they even want to give themselves a shot, they need to go like 18-10 right now, pretty much. This is their season right now. Yeah.
To at least be a buyer. I mean, the one thing the 6-17 start did is that it happened. It's part of the conversation for all time when we think of Blue Jays 2017. No matter what happens, you will look back at through the filter of 6-17. If they start the wild card game on the road, you'd say, hey, you know, if they didn't go 6-17, maybe they could host this thing. If they host the wild card, you say, well, maybe they could have won the division. If they missed the playoffs, well, we all know why. If they missed the playoffs, it's because they started 6-17. That's just how it is. But I sometimes don't get, and I know math is there, I know it's fact, I don't get too worked up and, well, you got to, you know, pass this many teams, or we know the number. 88, 89, 90 wins, that gets into the conversation. And yeah, that means you're going to have to win a lot more than you lose and finish, you know, 18 games, 17 games above 500. And it's tough to do, but somebody's going to do it because somebody always does it.
That's exactly right. I think that's a great way to put it. And that could be the Angels. I mean, it could be a team that we just don't expect because we've got this kind of flat surface situation. Here's my this is maybe my favorite weird stat of the entire season, okay? So, you know, I live in Denver, and so the Rockies, they've been a big thing this year. And the Rockies have been a pretty crummy team for years. They haven't finished above 106 season. They get off this monster start. They lead the division. Perhaps not coincidentally, I went and wrote an article or researched an article and reported on it. The Rockies are on fire, and I was about to publish it, and now they're terrible, so I have to sit on my article. Anyway, they've lost 8 games in a row. In that time, losing 8 games in a row, they've lost one game off of their wild card lead because the bottom of the National League is garbage. It's so bad. Yeah, and I include the Cubs in this situation. The Cubs have lost 7 of 8, so they can't even make up ground on the Rockies. In the American League, it's totally different. You know, you don't have, I guess the Astros might be the one dominant team, but you just have a lot of pretty good clubs, including toward the, you know, the playoff part, like the second wild card part, and it creates this open situation. So, sure, you know, anything can happen, and there are guys, if we're going to stick to the Jays for a second, there are guys that we haven't really seen it yet. Donaldson has put up, you know, fine numbers when he's been out there, but he hasn't had the steady run, Donaldson run, right? Healthy, 10 home runs in 20 games. We haven't seen that yet. You know, Stroh's been fine. Stroh hasn't thrown 3 shutouts in a row. Sanchez has had blister problems. We haven't seen the best of these Blue Jays. So, you know, and I'm not trying to be a company man or whatever, but it's entirely possible they do go 18-10 in the next month. That could totally happen because they have a pretty similar team to the ones that made the LCS 2 years in a row. And if these guys can get healthy, it's entirely possible. It's just that if they happen to go 18-10 and then the 7 teams, 8 teams they're competing with randomly also go 18-10, then they don't really get anywhere. So it's a weird spot to be bundled with all these teams. But your point is totally germane. You win 89, you're probably in the playoffs no matter what. And it doesn't really matter what the Royals are doing on July 17th. Win your 89 and you have your 89.
Yeah, you're right. Houston is undeniable. Cleveland, to me, is still undeniable. Like, a lot has gone wrong there. And, you know, guys are heating up and they're still 5 games over and they still lead the division. And it feels like Minnesota's been this huge story, and they have been. And Cleveland's still ahead of them, right? Like, there's nothing you can do. The AL East is a little more confusing because I'm not totally buying the Yankees. I still think it's the Red Sox division to lose. Again, you talk about a team that bad things have happened to, and they're still 8 games above 500. They'll be just fine.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I had the Red Sox at the beginning of the season. You know, the thing about the Yankees in particular is their problems are mostly solvable, right? I mean, Tyler Clippert has probably been their biggest problem. You just don't throw Tyler Clippert in a big spot.
But, yeah.
You know, make him, I mean, I don't want to dump on the guy, and I love the guy on a personal level, but don't make him your Jason Grilly. You know, if that's what's happening, then either kiss him goodbye or make him throw in the 4th inning mop-up role and just go acquire a relief pitcher, which, by the way, the easiest thing to get at the deadline is a relief pitcher. And maybe the second easiest thing, especially in this environment when we're on pace for literally the most home runs in any season in the history of baseball, is to go get my, I always use this term and I don't mean any offense, the big fat guy who hits 35 home runs and plays first base. Those guys are out there. You could totally get them. They don't have a first baseman. They don't really have a third baseman either. You could go get your Luis Valbuena, Yonder Alonso. Those guys are everywhere. You can get those guys. So, you know, if the Yankees, if that's their biggest problem, those are their biggest problems. I think they're fine. And their starting rotation has been better than expected. Judge is a beast. They've got good complementary players. They've even got prospects that can come up potentially and help the club. So, I don't think they're a fully formed entity, but I think that if you're, let's say you're a Yankees fan and you're looking for optimism, their problems are the easiest to solve problems you can possibly imagine.
Jonah Carey joins us. The name around here, I mean, it's funny because Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is so marketable. So we mention him number one, and then we generally mention Bo Bichette number two, even though even though he's probably having the better season. Someone said this to me a while ago. If you reconstruct the draft, he might go number one overall, which is crazy. We are so used to, hey, this was going to be a process. The Blue Jays' cupboards are bare. They got to find a way to kind of fake win for a couple of years, and maybe then you can transition into this, you know, long-term sustainable, hey, the Jays are going to be a good team because they're always a good team. That would be great. Bo Bichette is a really interesting name around these parts. He's having maybe the best minor league season of anyone ever in the organization. So now we're trying to kind of teach ourselves what is the best way to develop this guy in terms of moves and levels and when you promote and why you promote. What do you think?
It really depends on the player. I know there's some organizations, the Atlanta Braves, who did such a great job of developing prospects, you know, in their heyday in the 90s and the early aughts and all that. They'd push guys. You see Andre Jones in the majors, you know, as a 19-year-old. Mm-hmm. Chipper came up pretty quick. They would draft high school athletes. They'd put, you know, inevitably put up huge numbers, and they'd be in the majors by 21 at the latest. That's fine, but that was their particular method. You know, they were specifically targeting tools guys who, if their tools worked out, were so advanced that you can bring them up. But that's not a one-size-fits-all. You know, there are guys that are better suited to come up later. I'll give you one example that comes to mind immediately is Brandon Phillips. If you remember Brandon Phillips as a prospect, he was an Expos prospect, so it's easy for me to remember. You know, he gets traded in that blockbuster deal to Cleveland for Bartolo and all Brandon Phillips. And I mean, he's, you know, considered this monster prospect, maybe the best of the three in that deal. He didn't work out for Cleveland at all. You know, great, aside from Cliff Lee did, mm-hmm. but Brandon Phillips just didn't play. He bounces over to Cincinnati for nothing. They got him for nothing. And at like 26, he breaks through. You know, 27 is when he starts being a good player. So I can't give you a firm answer because it depends entirely on the player. And I don't even think Bo Bichette knows the answer. Maybe Bo Bichette goes to Double A or Triple A and just isn't good, or at least needs time. Maybe he needs a year and a half at that level. So all you could do is what you have. Now, if you think that he's mastered this particular level, fine, then you promote him. But I'd be careful about being too aggressive because, you know, you don't want to stunt this guy's future. Yes, it would be nice if the Jays could get him, whatever, by 2020s or even 2019, he's in the big leagues. That'd be wonderful. But, you know, if you want him to be a star for a decade with the organization, you don't want to push him too hard. So I think that anybody who tries to come up with an answer that, yeah, definitely go fast or definitely go slow, that's not realistic. I mean, it's like saying that, you know, Bartolo Colon should be handled the same way as Pedro Martinez, the way to buck 46. You just can't do that. You know, you have to have all kinds of different methods for all kinds of different players.
Yeah, it's tricky. And again, it's a good problem to have because now all of a sudden we're talking about Bo Bichette's development. And you know, yeah. And it's not like, oh, we all know this Jays team is going to lose 95 games, so that's what we focus on. He's had that good of a season. And for me too, and we had this conversation before the show, and I don't know the kid. I mean, he has the baseball bloodlines, which is going to help. But you got to remember too that, I mean, yes, you're playing Class A ball, but guess what? You're living in your first apartment, and you know you're learning how to, you know, cook for yourself or buy groceries, and we forget about that, right? Like, this is not just on the field development; it's off the field too.
Yeah, that's all true, and good organizations do this well. And I would add, you know, it's easier in the case of Bichette, but if you've got a player, you know, who comes from a different country or, you know, from a real small town in one particular place and isn't used to another kind of place, I can remember I interviewed Ellis Valentine, was writing the Expos book, and Ellis is obviously American, so that's fine, but they stuck him in Jamestown, New York to start.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 17 years old. He'd never been away from home. I don't think he traveled more than 10 miles away from his house. And he was the only person of color in Jamestown, New York. Every single person was white. And it was weird, and he was depressed, and he didn't know what to do. Ellis Valentine had his own demons and other stuff happened, whatever, but that compounds the thing. So you want to have, you know, native Spanish-speaking coaches and instructors. You want to have somebody there who can help you get an apartment, who can tell you not to eat, you know, corn pops all the time, but maybe you should, you know, mix in some chicken breast or salad or whatever. Yeah, of course. Think about what an idiot you probably were, and I was, at 17 or even 20. You know, these kids aren't any different. They don't suddenly, they're not more mature. They're not smarter than the rest of us. They're just like everybody else. So I think that's so on point. And the best organizations treat it very seriously. You know, if they spend money on a prospect or whatever, they're doing everything that they can. They're not peanut butter and jellying the guy every day. They're putting him on a workout regimen. And yeah, they're teaching him life skills as early as possible.
He is Jonah Carey, CBS Sports, Sports Illustrated. His fun report is up now on his Twitter and on SI.com and the Jonah Carey podcast as well. Thanks for this. We'll talk to you soon.
also on Sportsnet today, I wrote about George Bell, Lloyd Mosby, and Jesse Barfield.
You did.
Sportsnet.ca.
You did. And how what's the article? How they stack up against other great outfields?
Exactly. So, I mean, they're not going to be as good as, you know, any Babe Ruth outfield or whatever. But, you know, in the modern era, they're up there. You know, there's arguments about Lynn and Rice and Evans and the current Marlins outfield and some of the others. But I'll tell you, 85 to 87, those guys were pretty darn fun. Any Jays fan of a certain age will certainly remember.
Where does Pierce, Pilar, and Carrera stack up? Not as high on the defensive side.
Carrera, no, yeah. not so much.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Jonah.
Cheers, man.